Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
The following is a paid program, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent the opinions of the management of this station or Hamel Broadcasting.
Good morning and welcome to Happy Hour here. Jonna Spilbor, Carol Pesci, some fella doing the talking, and we've got another show for you today. And actually, what we're going to do today, though, is something we have done before, is we are going to replay just our interview portion of the show. And a very, very cool guest that we had a few weeks ago, a ball player from the Chicago Cubs system, and he has written a book, and he has gone on to help a ton of other ball players and professional athletes.
He has. His name is Jim Murphy. He's the author of Inner Excellence, Train Your Mind for Extraordinary Performance and the Best Possible Life. It was a New York Times number one bestseller. It went viral when someone saw A.J. Brown reading it on the sidelines of a playoff game. And so this guy, as you said, was a former ball player, got injured, ended up with like this identity crisis, who am I? And then went on his move to the desert, went on this real search to understand what makes us excel. And he surprisingly gets incredible performance out of people he coaches by coaching them to get the inner game right first before focusing on the outcome on the outer game. It's counterintuitive, but he's super cool, he's super smart, and he's had incredible success. So he's somebody you'll want to listen to.
Oh, without a doubt. That was a fantastic interview with that guy.
Yep.
With Mr. Murphy.
Sure was.
I am listening to his book as we speak, and I will say you're going to have to, if you're like me, if you're very type A and a know-it-all, and it's true.
The know-it-all part, the audience is already aware.
Oh, they know?
They're in the loop on that.
Yeah.
Because I was just going to say, I am listening to it. It is a very good book, but if you are type A, you're going to have a little bit of trouble, you know, jumping on the bandwagon of it. To me, at least, I'm having a little bit of trouble like, oh, this would hurt if I had to do that. Or, oh, you mean not like I can't pay attention to anything, but like not like it's tough. But he's kind of proven the strategy. So I'm going to keep listening, and I'm going to wrap my mind around the concept because it's hard for us type A's.
So is he asking you to break out of whatever your comfort zone might be?
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah,
exactly. That is exactly what he's doing. Which, if you think about it, isn't that where everything lies? Like outside comfort zone.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, I mean, it's like living in a vacuum. You know, if you've got a bunch of people just telling you everything you're doing is great, then you don't realize because nobody from the outside is telling you, hey, dude, you're screwing up. You know, this is not the way it should be. So, yeah, breaking out of that comfort zone and letting somebody from the outside give you a hand is pretty big.
And does sitting on a love seat with a pillow on your lap and your dog sleeping next to you, is that the comfort zone?
That is so the comfort.
Yes. Now, that is a physical and emotional comfort zone.
Ooh,
oh, without a doubt. Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's an impenetrable comfort zone.
You are right. That's a good word. I ain't giving this up for nothing.
Exactly. So, but you know, when you read this book, there are going to be things that, you know, if your comfort zone is not as awesome as yours, let's say your comfort zone is, you know, go, 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 think, or whatever you've got to do, it's going to tell you to slow it down. And that can be tough.
Oh, I could see your eye rolls when you were listening to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Thankfully, it was in the car. But you know what else? You know what else?
What else? Do you have something to complain about, perhaps?
Speaking of comfort zones.
Yes, exactly. That is definitely a comfort zone for Carol and I.
I used to be real, real comfortable flirting. I say used to be. Why?
Yeah.
Why? Yes, tense. Why? Okay.
Why? Because I've seen you do it and you're good.
You've said, right? I was pretty good at it.
Like, you did it. We were trying to get admitted. Well, we got admitted into Picatinny Arsenal to go see Gary V, and you were driving, and the guard wanted to see your ID. And you wouldn't let your ID out of your hand because you kept your thumb on your birth date.
Yep.
And you were flirting with the guard, including telling him we're married now.
Yes, we were.
So, yeah, I've seen you do it.
Seen me in action, right? It comes, well, let me just say, it used to come naturally. Like, I would just, I don't know, ooze sex appeal and flirtiness.
Okay.
And obviously self-confidence as well.
With a little smidge of self-confidence, right? And a little touch of a je ne sais quoi, or as I like to say, je ne sais quoi. I used to have.
And this is where we play the sad dramatic music now, right?
Yes.
As it has disappeared.
Wah, wah.
So you know, she's going to make that exact sound.
You're not.
What happened? What happened? I've got my pillow ready.
Okay. Because this one might be the one that sends me straight into therapy, because I don't know what happened. But okay. So last weekend, spur of the moment, me and a bunch of people decided to go to the casino, the one that's localish here, the one up in Monticello. They have a couple of nice restaurants there, and a bunch of us decided to go spur of the moment. Okay, fine, no problem. And when we go to the casino, typically when you go with a bunch of people, it's not like we're, you know, tourists and we all stick together and somebody holds the flag like, I'm in front, look for me. Like, you know, we split up, we do our things, and then we meet in the middle to meet for dinner or meet for a drink. That's how we roll. So it just so happened that I think maybe I was out of money because I was rolling a little too hard at the slot machines. And I decided that I was going to go over to this little bar area. They had a big screen TV and something was on there that I wanted to see. So I go over there.
Probably you on the news.
Yeah, like, oh, that was me.
I'm going to go over here. All right. See you guys later.
And I'm just going to find myself standing directly next to the television, but I'm not going to worry about if anybody's going to notice it's me.
No, I'm just going to flip my hair back. Okay. So, I belly up to this bar and I order a margarita, and I'm watching this big screen TV, and I am by myself, and the bar is kind of sparsely populated. It's not like I had to squeeze in or anything. So a few minutes goes by and I'm just not paying attention. And this man comes up to me, and he's part of a group of guys. And he comes up to me and he says, you know, very nonchalant, is anybody sitting here? And he's pointing to the bar stool that's next to me. So I go, no, it's all yours. Take it. So he takes the bar stool and he slides it right next to mine, and he sits down and like looks me square in the face.
Oh boy. Okay.
Right. So now it takes a second to register that he is trying to be funny and flirty. So I had to run, you know, through my brain. I had to cycle through stranger danger versus do I want to have a little fun with this? So, you know, I just kind of laugh and I give him a weird look, and his friends laugh and they're like, oh, you know, he does that all the time, blah, 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 blah. So I just kind of chuckle and I let it go. The next thing I know, he only moves the chair a little bit away from me and he wants to engage in a conversation. Now, I am so, this is where it gets ugly for me, because ordinarily I'd be like, I'm John, a life of the party. Sure, you want to have a conversation? I'll entertain all of you all. Anybody wants to buy me a drink? I got jokes. I got stories. I got stuff.
Right? John on tour.
Exactly. But now all of a sudden, I'm sitting there with my margarita. He was a decent looking guy. And his friends were all, you could tell they were all like,
yeah, egging him on,
nerdy professionals or something, you know. And he's literally trying to flirt. And I'm saying to myself, I don't I don't know what to do here. Like, I know that I am with a bunch of people, and I know that I used to be a very good flirt, but all of a sudden it was like, I forgot how to do this. Almost like, huh, I forgot that I'm supposed to inhale, then exhale. How did I forget how to do that? Like, it comes so second nature to me. So I ended up leaving. Yes. Anybody there?
Anybody there? No, no. We're here. First thing I thought of, by the way, and this is not because of you, but first of all, his buddies were probably shooting some video because he told them he was going to go sit down next to this very good looking.
Oh, somebody was videotaping it.
Yeah, somebody was definitely videotaping it. And then the next thing I thought of was, as he's flirting, not that you were going to say that you had forgotten how to flirt, but that you had become an old man and a lazy boy saying to your family, hey, I'm watching this. Okay. No, there's no talking.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm into the show. But no, that's I was not expecting you to say that it just completely left you the ability, the ability to flirt.
I wish I could say I was so into whatever was on that big screen that that was more important than me being myself. But that was not the case. I literally had a small panicked moment where I can't even, I wish I could describe something like by analogy, like almost like it, almost like this, almost like, let's say you were in the ocean and you're having fun in the ocean and all of a sudden, like kind of a big wave comes up and you get a little bit like, oh no, I was fine in this ocean when it was nice and kind of calm. And now here comes this big wave and oh no, I'm going to panic. Oh no. And you're not sure whether you should swim to the shore or, you know, raise your hand and scream for a lifeguard. But then all of a sudden you remember that you're only in 3 feet of freaking water. Just put your foot down. Just like you can stand up. It doesn't matter. But no, I like before I got to the point in my, oh my God, I have forgotten how to flirt panic. I didn't realize that I could have just stood up and started flirting. Instead, I was like, peace out. And I left.
Instead, you remembered that your mother told you not to go into the ocean when you left for San Diego.
Yeah, exactly. Peace out.
Well, let me ask you a question, though.
Uh-huh.
Is part of it, though, that maybe is concerning you is the fact that you just didn't care to.
Why would I not care to?
I'm just myself. I'm just saying, maybe that's part of the thing here, that you suddenly got it. Not that you lost the mojo, but you just didn't care to have it. You weren't interested.
That's like saying I am no longer myself.
Well, Jonna, maybe there was an element of intuition there, that because you said when he first sat down, you didn't know if it was like flirt time or is it danger time? Mm-hmm. And maybe there was a part deep inside of you that was like, this isn't the right place to be. Or do you feel it was a confidence thing versus a safety thing?
That is I hate to say this because so many people say this to you on a daily basis, especially on this show, but that is an excellent question, Curly Pesky. That is an excellent question. And you know what? That is giving me a little bit of introspection. And in fact, I might even go with that. I might go with that. My intuition is so strong that it kind of overtook my flirt gene. Right. My flirt DNA was like, had to get pushed out of the way because my intuition was like, hold my beer. I got this. Let's go. Ah,
could have been.
I like it. I like it a lot.
You see, now you see, that's where I still am going to go back to what I think the possibility was, because now you're just saying, oh, OK, yeah, I'll take that one because it's not the one that really that I was concerned with.
Yeah, that serves my ego.
Yeah. Thank you, Carol. Thank you for that safety blanket, like John had just said, actually.
No, I'm going to go with that. That had to be part of it, because you know what it felt like? And you guys will relate to this. When I walked away, when I said to myself, I'm peace outing this, and I slugged down what was rest of my, I might have taken the margarita with me. I can't remember. But when I peace outed, it was like, you know, when you approach, say, a cute cat, and the cat looks like, you know, oh, this is a friendly cat, I'm just gonna go pet this cat. But then the cat looks at you like you're a moron, and how dare you?
Like Quinn.
Yeah, like exactly like Quinn. I walked away from that scene, me and these four gentlemen, like, how dare you try to pet me now? No.
Is that what you felt for real?
I did. I felt just like Quinn. I felt just like her. Like I wasn't ready for it. I wasn't expecting it. Maybe I really didn't want it at the time. I'm there with a bunch of people. I don't want to have to explain myself if they come up and like, who are these guys you're talking to? I just didn't want to.
So yeah. It seems perhaps part of the issue is he wasn't really as into you. He was playing a game and you were part of his game and you didn't want to be that game piece. Because he was doing it to impress his friends or on a bet.
Oh, my God.
Oh, well, I think that's even more likely than my first theory.
Yeah, I see. Now, I could go with that, Carol, because I have mentioned that as well, that, you know, his
You're
friends
using
are probably
me
videotaping.
For your game.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is the kind of thing that Barry does. Watch this, and I'll get it on video.
Yeah.
But it ties into your first theory, because that's what my intuition could have been telling me.
There you go. You're like off the hook, babe.
He wasn't going to kidnap and murder me. I just didn't want to be part of his little juvenile stunt.
Right.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome.
So much better. I'm back to being me. I got me back. Oh.
Carol, you're welcome. Ooh,
they like me. They really, really like me.
That's right. Yes.
Dang. Oh, now I got to go out and I got to go find me somebody to flirt with on my terms. Yes, yes, and yes. Okay. Phew. John is back.
John is back.
Oh, my God. She is back. I hate you, Carol.
Good time for us to go. I think this is sort of a good time.
Sure. Perfect. I think this is perfect timing.
I don't know. Throw me a lob. I don't know.
This is just what some athletes that are lost might say to themselves. And after they talk to Jim Murphy, they feel like they're back.
Okay. Coming up after the break, we will be talking with author and former Major League, part of the Major League Baseball system, Jim Murphy. He's the author of Inner Excellence, Train Your Mind for Extraordinary Performance and the Best Possible Life. Maybe he can coach these guys on how to flirt better.
There we go. All right. Jim Murphy on the way. You have Jonas Spillmore. You have Carol Pesci. You have this fella. And we will be right back with more from Happy Hour.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back to Happy Hour here. Jonna Spillboard, Carol Pesci, Just Some Fella, and time now to get to our guest for this morning. And we are going to be speaking with Jim Murphy, right, Carol?
We sure are. So we love smart people, we love cool people and fun people, and we got the whole package today. Excuse me. We've got with us Jim Murphy, who is a former professional baseball player who retired after an injury. This led him to a crisis of identity faced with figuring out who he really was. What he discovered led to the ideas behind his book, Inner Excellence, Train Your Mind for Extraordinary Performance and the Best Possible Life. He shares that we all have a mind that thinks negative thoughts and constantly judges our circumstances, ourselves, or others, and that changing that changes everything. He now coaches other professionals, including athletes, to master the inner game, leading to performance excellence. His book, interestingly, went viral when A.J. Brown was seen reading it on the sidelines of an NFL playoff game. Jim Murphy, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Love it. So I've read part of your book. I haven't finished it yet. Your story is fascinating, and I would love to begin there. What is the backstory that led you on this journey to discover these things that you discovered, and then why it mattered to you to put that into a book for others? I know that's a loaded question.
So I always dreamed about being a superstar professional athlete, like most American boys. You know, I played baseball, basketball, football growing up. And I got drafted by the Chicago Cubs out of Portland State University in Oregon. And it was a dream come true. But I played 5 years in the minor leagues and got injured and had to retire. And so dream over and my identity completely lost. I felt like I was somebody as a pro athlete nobody when I lost that status. But even as a pro athlete, I didn't really want my friends to introduce me if I didn't really have a good season, because, you know, in baseball, you're kind of evaluated by your batting average. And if they said, oh, my friend plays in the Cubs organization, you know, they're going to ask about my performance. And so everything about my identity was performance related. And when I lost it, it was so devastating.
That line that you just said, I think so many of us hold ourselves to that standard, that identity of what we do or what we accomplish. And then if we lose that or that changes, we're lost.
Yeah, super common. And this is, you know, kind of answering the question of why I wrote it is because I found that this is human nature. The human heart, the part that runs our lives along with our subconscious mind, has this deep need to be loved. And everything that we do is in search of this love, to be loved and accepted, to have an identity, to feel like I have some worth. And we do that through trying to get more achievements or more status or improve my looks and money, etc. And it's always this chase your tail, endless treadmill that never fulfills. So, okay, so back to my story. Should I finish that story?
No, go ahead. I was going to bring you back to the desert, but we'll get there.
Yes, thank you. So the Cubs, and don't know what to do with my life. I'm driving a truck for Federal Express, downtown Seattle. I get asked to coach a high school baseball team, had no interest in coaching, just never thought of it. Would I be able to help anybody? Would they listen to anything I said? And we went undefeated. And so then I thought, oh, wow, I guess my destiny was not to be a superstar Major League Baseball player. It's to be a superstar Major League Baseball manager. And so I get into coaching. I do my master's in coaching science. I coached 1 year at the Texas Rangers. It just wasn't a good fit. Now I'm devastated again because all of a sudden I had my identity again. I was somebody again, pro baseball coach. And then I left and lost it. I get asked by Major League Baseball if I'm interested in coaching South Africa, being their hitting coach for the 2000 Sydney Olympics. I fly down there. It was an amazing experience. Our bat boy's living in the tool shed of our baseball field with his mother and little brother.
Wow.
Never really seen poverty before. His name was Gifton Gupe. He ends up getting drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates, becomes the first African-born player ever to play in the big leagues. Amazing story you can read about in Sports Illustrated. We go on to have one of the biggest upset victories in Olympic baseball history. I get to meet Nelson Mandela, march in opening ceremonies.
I have goosebumps.
Amazing experience. Yeah, it was just this incredible experience in 2000. But now what am I going to do after that? I left pro baseball, the highest level. I left in the middle of the season. So kind of burned that bridge. And then the Olympics was amazing, but that's only every 4 years. So what am I going to do now? And so that's when I ended up leaving for the desert. I left to go live a life of solitude. And back when we had screensavers on our laptops, mine said, those destined for greatness must first walk alone in the desert. And so that's what I did. I left for the desert to go live a life of solitude, to figure out what to do with my life. And that's where Inner Excellence was born.
How did you know that's what you needed to do?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. There was a TV show back in the, 90s probably, called Ellen DeGeneres. And she, this one episode, she's moving out of her roommate's house, and it was her best friend, and her friend's like, why are you moving out? We have such a good time. Like, we could sit around and do nothing and just have so much fun. And she said, that's exactly why I'm moving out, because 5 years from now I could do nothing and just have such fun doing nothing, but I'll be in the exact same place. And I thought about that a lot for my life. I was like, I really feel like I'm destined to do something great with my life. And I need to get away from anyone that's going to look at me in my past. I need to think new thoughts and start fresh. And so that's where the desert came in.
And were you living in solitude?
Well, I got invited by a former teammate who was in Tucson, Arizona, starting a baseball academy, Centerfield Baseball Academy, Ricky Spruggs. He said, can you come down and help me for the weekend? And I thought, okay, this is my perfect chance. I'll go help him out part-time, and I'll move there, and I'll live this life of solitude. It wasn't like I lived in a teepee somewhere. I lived in the baseball academy for a few months, which had no showers, so I was showering at the gym. But to give you kind of an example of what my life was like, I think it was my second New Year's there in the desert. I'm in an empty house. I'm writing in my journal. I hear a noise. I go outside and I see fireworks. And that's when I realized it was New Year's Eve.
Wow.
So
wow.
It was a lonely experience.
Jim, this is Jonna. Do you think, part of the reason why you felt compelled to go really be alone in the desert, like, you know, not just alone in your apartment in some city, right, is because you wanted to avoid people judging you while you were in this kind of cocoon trying to figure out what you were going to do? Or did you just think you needed to keep people away? Like, what, why did you think you need, I know it sounds like a dumb question, why did you think you needed to be so far away from?
Yeah, it's a great question. Actually, it was the opposite of judging. I didn't hear.
A great question.
So Jim, we have this competition. Whenever someone tells me that's an excellent question, John, I go, question.
You do it all the time, Jim.
So you just told her she asked a great question. She's rubbing it in. Just say it. Now you're caught up.
Right. Yeah. We've got
a favorite question of all time, but it might have been.
We've got a chalkboard, Jim. It has marks. It's got two columns on it. Jonna, Carol. Jonna has two marks.
After this call, I'm going to fly out there and we're going to schedule an inner excellence workshop so we can deal with this outcome orientation you guys have. Although, ironically, those clients have the best year of their careers or the best year of their last 5 years, our first year together. The majority do. So even though we don't focus on results, they get the best results. Okay. So the question, I actually, it was the opposite of judgment why I left. It was actually because of the support. Ironically, I never really thought about it. So I was a personal trainer trying to figure out what to do with my life. And I thought, you know what, if I stay here, everyone's going to say, why would you change anything? Jim, you know, we love you. You're doing so good. You know, everyone loves you. Like, don't change anything. That's what I knew I had to get away from. At least I didn't know I had to get away from it. I knew that I wanted to start with a clean slate. If anything is possible, what would I do? What's the purpose of my life? That's what I needed to figure out. And I didn't want anyone to influence me. You know, it's just like if I flew out to your hometown and you're going to give me a tour, I may not want to say, hey, you know, I want to do this or I want to do that because I don't want to influence what you're going to do because I want, you know, the experience from your point of view.
The most.
So would you say being in solitude, did you get, and I like to call them like downloads, like instances of knowing that come from a bigger place that only a quiet mind can receive?
Well, I can tell you there's a lot of lonely moments and I had no idea anything good would come out of it. I mean, I was hoping. I didn't go there to write a book. I just knew that, I gave away the majority of my possessions. I moved to the desert, got rid of my TV. This is before streaming. And so now I just like realized, okay, I can't bring my TV with me because the worst possible outcome would be I go to the desert. I'm totally bored and lonely and I totally waste my time. So no TV. And so it was very lonely. I mean, a lot of solitary moments.
How did you come to the perfect, your book? I got to be honest. I have a whole bunch of screenshots and lines underlined. I could read so many quotes from your book because there's just some powerful insight. And I'm trying to understand how you came to that, how you figured out. And I'm going to read something actually from your book. Most of us have had it backwards, trying to be successful in order to be happy. If we focus on improving our inner world, however, we'll achieve far more. We can have joy and peace, purpose and power, which will maximize our performance as well. But we need to get the order right if we want extraordinary performance over the long term and an amazing life. Heart first, performance second. So that was the crux of this book. But how'd you come to that understanding?
Yeah, that is, you know, just I get the chills listening to that because it's so true, so powerful. Thank you for sharing that. You know, that whole pursuit was so, I have so many thoughts coming to my mind right now. I can't even put them all together. Can you tell me the question again?
Of course. Yeah. The question is, how did you come to that profound understanding and with such clarity that it is the inner world first? And that which I think part of the story here too is like we look at celebrities or people who on the outside appear to have it all. Man, I wish I could have that. And they're battling and they're struggling with their inner world. And you figured it out. Did you figure that out completely in the desert? Was part of it getting your master's as coaching? You know, I'm trying to understand how you figured out that profound distinction that the inner world matters first and the outer world will excel when you master the inner world.
Yeah, the first thing that happened was thanks for explaining. I I decided that I wanted to become a personal coach to pro baseball players and teach them how to have peace and confidence under pressure. I decided this is going to be the job I'm going to do. And my first two clients did amazing. So then I was like, okay, this is going to be my job. So I'm going to put together a little manual on how to have peace and confidence under pressure for future clients. And so I called up a sports psychologist and I asked him, how can a pro baseball player in game 7 of the World Series, bottom of the ninth, two outs, bases loaded, down by one, full count, how can that guy have peace and confidence?
Yeah.
And then similarly, how can an Olympic athlete train for 4 years for an event that may last less than a minute and have peace and confidence in that situation? And that brought more questions than it did answers. So I called another psychologist and another and another and another. And that led to the 5 years of full-time writing and research, 50 hours a week for 5 years straight. So that's what kind of kicked it off. And what I found there was that the heart is the key to your life. And when I say heart, I mean your spirit, your will, the deepest part of you. We're far more than thinking machines. We need to get to your subconscious mind and your heart if we really want to impact your life or anyone's life, whether you're a parent, a counselor, a teacher, a coach, a friend. We need to get to that deeper level. And that's where, you know, that's the level of inner strength and mental toughness and inner peace and beauty. Gratitude, those five things are all interlinked. And so that's what I found in the desert.
Jim, this is Jonna again.
Here comes a great question. Get ready.
No, seriously, you got a pen?
No, I do. I have a challenging question. So what would you say to those of us who agree that, you know, the heart comes first, the inner work has to come first for the outer to be good? What would you say to those of us who can't go to the damn desert? Like, what would you say to those of us who, you know, you got to go to the desert, so you probably weren't worried about paying the electric bill, the mortgage, where you're putting the kids on the bus and all that, and all that stuff. And that's awesome. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who want to work on the inner, and the outer is so loud that they can't.
Oh,
that is a great question. I'm going to give you that. So, I'm giving you that.
Man, that is good. So there's two things. One, you can go to the desert. So I don't think that's true. It's just like saying, I can't golf with you, Jim, on Monday. I got to go to work. That's not true. That's never been true. The truth is, when someone says that, they don't want to go golfing with me on Monday. I mean, I don't know why they would say that, but because they feel like they might get fired or in trouble at work. You know, obviously they could golf. They just they feel the repercussions are greater than the advantage. It's just like, you know, I had a pro golfer say, sometimes I just want to walk off the course, but I can't do that. I was like, wait a second, you can't? Next time you ever feel like that on the course, I want you to know you've got the freedom. You've got choices. You've got agency. You think it through. Okay, I'm going to walk. I want to walk off the course right now. Okay, let's think it through. Okay, I'm going to walk. I'm going to go to the tent. I'm going to tell them I'm withdrawing. I'm going to throw my clubs in the trunk. I'm going to try not to slam the trunk. I'm going to drive to Chipotle with my caddy, and I'm going to have a burrito with my caddy and Chipotle. And we're going to stare at each other, and we're going to sit there. Would I rather sit there with him or keep facing my challenges out here? And then if you'd rather do it, then go do it. That's the better thing. And so we all have agency. And so hurry sickness is one of the biggest challenges that we face.
What a good term. What a good term.
Hurry sickness.
So
hurry. Yeah. Like always in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Yeah. Anxiety is epidemic levels that we have right now. Anxiety is a mind with too many thoughts from too many concerns. I used to think that I would hurry to get things done so I could reduce my stress. Now I realize that the hurry was a big cause of the stress.
That is
Can I give
huge.
You another example from today?
Yes, please.
So I had a 12 o'clock meeting with the police to get fingerprinted. And I don't know if I should get into that story, but I had to get fingerprinted here in Spain. I'm just kidding. It's just for residency. But so I found out yesterday I had a 12 o'clock meeting, but I also had a 1:10 p.m. NPR interview. And then I had a 3 o'clock meeting and then 4 o'clock with you guys. And so I get there and the meeting I didn't get in to see the police until 12:45. And then they said, oh, you need a photo. You don't have a photo with you. You need a passport photo. And then so they tell me about, and they don't speak English. So I'm trying to work through my broken Spanish. And I soon understand they want me to go to a photo booth on the side of the road somewhere in downtown Alicante. And so it's a little unorthodox. But I can't find it. And so eventually, long story short, I started to get a little stressed. I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever stressed when you have like so much out of your control, so many things to do, and you don't, how can I keep track of it all?
Never, ever.
And so the first principle of inner excellence is everything is here to teach me and help me. It's all working for my good. Mm. And remember, the thing that I always remind myself is God is training for you, Jim. It's all training for you. Like that thing you think is the worst thing that in your life, it could be the best thing. And that thing that you think is so horrible, it could be orchestrated by God, by the universe, specifically for you, for your good. And doesn't that change everything? If you're undergoing some challenge, and then what if you realize all of a sudden you have the wisdom of the universe and you realize, actually, this was all orchestrated for you. It's not hurting you or something in your way. It's here to develop you. And so I remember that. I was like, okay, you know what? I'm not going to stress about all these things I can't control. And I mean, there's a good chance it's not going to work out. And that, you know, I might have to drive the hour back to the police station some other day. But I'm going to trust that it's all going to work for my good. And that, and I believe it can happen. I just can't stress about all the different things I can't control. I'm going to do one thing at a time. And so I got out of the police station at about 12:50 p.m. for my 1:10 meeting. And then I'm driving around. There's no parking. And so finally, I found parking at like, I don't know, 1:03. And I have my 1:10 interview, and that lasts till 1:25. And then the photo place, I found one, but they close at 1:45. And I'm going to be back at the TV station by 2 p.m. So all of this happens. It all worked out perfectly. And I realized it was way better that that all happened instead of just having smoothly. That was all way better for me, because the number one thing I want in my life is wisdom. And faith goes along with wisdom. And there's no way to grow your faith unless you go through difficulties. And there's no way to grow your wisdom without difficulties, without challenges. If there's things that you can't control and you want but can't control, if there's nothing like that, you'll never grow in faith or wisdom. You have to have things out of your control that you want and can't control. And so it was amazing today.
That is quite a story. And it reminds me, I'm sure you'll know who said this, but nothing is good or bad except the thinking that makes it so.
Powerful.
And yeah. And so this is one of the first principles in your book. So John asked the amazing question for those of us who, as you explained, choose not to go to the desert to gain the insight that you did. Your book walks people through that process of changing how they see themselves, how they see the world, how they see the things, because everything we're after, we think, okay, I want that car, I want that house, or I want that experience. Truly, in the end, what we want is because we expect it to help us feel a certain way. Mm-hmm. And your book walks us through how to change our perceptions, the choices that we make to get that feeling first. Am I right?
Oh, man, I think we got to talk about the $10 million house story, don't we?
Oh, I didn't get there yet. Oh, my goodness. Okay, we have about another 3 minutes. I want to hear it. Can we do that in three minutes?
Okay, so yes, there's another book called The Best Possible Life. You get the full story in there that I wrote. And so essentially, what would you rather have? A $10 million house on the ocean, fully paid off, or live in an apartment the rest of your life, paycheck to paycheck, no savings ever, but be guaranteed amazing experiences, deep contentment, joy, confidence, enriching relationships, a meaningful purpose for the rest of your life, every day the rest of your life. Which would you rather
have? Door number two. I picked door number two. Easy.
Yeah, and door number two sounds very familiar, actually. You know, I can relate. I can relate to door number two.
So my whole life, I would have always chosen number one, because I'd never really had a lot of anxiety until one day I did. And then I started to realize, well, what is it that why do you want the nice house? Isn't it because you want amazing experiences and deep, enriching relationships? Isn't that why you want the house? Well, what if you could get it directly? And that's what inner excellence is. We go for that life directly because you don't even know if the house will make you happy. I mean, it could make you devastatingly anxious and stressed out.
Amazing. Jim, I would love to have you come back, because you've got so much to offer. I love your energy. I love your insight. We're talking with Jim Murphy. He is the author of Inner Excellence, Train Your Mind for Extraordinary Performance and the Best Possible Life. If people wanted to learn more about you, I don't know if you are taking on clients for coaching or buy your book. How do they do that?
go to innerexcellence.com, sign up for my newsletter, the VIP newsletter, and they'll announce retreats and workshops. And I also send out tips and stuff on there. You can follow me on Instagram, InnerExcellence Jim Murphy. You can send me a message there if you like, or join our Facebook group, InnerExcellence.
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your insight with us and our listeners, and the care and concern you've taken in writing this book, and all that you do to help others. We appreciate you.
Jim, wait. That's Carol's nice way of saying goodbye. Here's mine. I just want to warn you about one thing while you're in Spain. Okay? You ready?
Yes. Yes.
Squiggly food. That's all I'm going to say. Squiggly food. All right? Watch yourself.
The food here is so amazing. Thanks so much for having me, you guys. Love you guys.
Yes. Right.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you very much, and thank you for putting another marker on Jonna's side of the board. All right, we'll be right back. Segment number three is on the way with Jonna Spilborg, Carol Pesci, and this fella named Frankenberry. We'll be right back.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back one more time this morning. It's Happy Hour. Jonna Spilborg, Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello. Frankenberry.
Yeah, I figured I'd try to throw you two off this week, didn't we? So it was nice to replay Jim Murphy. Now, for the audience's sake, we did talk to Jim Murphy a few weeks ago, but he is definitely an interview and a person worth hearing again.
Yeah, boy, he's flipping the script, isn't he? You think that goal that you want to achieve, when you finally get that outer achievement, award, whatever, it's going to get you the feeling inside. And to think that he is massively successful in coaching people by helping them get those inner goals, that inner state of being right first, and then you excel on the outside. It's not what we're used to thinking or hearing.
Right, yeah. Right. And, the other important thing is, too, I mean, for everybody out there that may define themselves over one particular role, only to find out that role ain't it, that's kind of scary.
Right, right. That's what threw him in for a loop and made him to go do some research and understand human nature and write his book and coach people.
Yeah.
Because he went through that.
It's definitely uncomfortable. And you'll notice that our listeners, as they go through the book. But, if I think about it a little more, we've had so many experts on this show, and we know a lot of people in our personal lives where if you had to distill, what is the one thing that can really bring about massive positive change in a person's life? It really is that. It's about getting comfortable on the inside first, not chasing the things on the outside. That's what meditation's all about, which I also struggle with. That's what a lot of our guests have talked about. And then vibrating with that inner feeling to manifest stuff that you may want. It's not wrong to want things.
Right. He's not saying it is. Right. Correct. Right. But to not have your state of being make or break on accomplishing that. And I think I asked him this question or talked about it during the interview. We look at certain celebrities and think they got it, right? Performers. Take a Justin Bieber as an example. Like, look at the success. They've got it. They're it. And not necessarily, because we think you've accomplished this massive thing on the outside. You got the money, you got the fame, you got the success. But that doesn't mean you're still not struggling on the inside. And I would imagine it also makes it more confusing when you do hit those outer goals and you still feel like crap or insecure or like a fraud, because then you start judging yourself or feeling that way because you should feel better. And he helps you understand that the opposite is true and to get that inner game right.
Yeah, exactly. And we can't look at these, celebrities, we often envy them, right? They feel like they're royalty among us. But then you look at something, and I'm not going to get too deep into this, but you take somebody as massively successful as P. Diddy, who is on trial. By the time this show airs, we won't have a verdict yet, but we're going to have one soon. Like, look what he did with all of his success and money. He did not use it well, obviously. Right. So, and there's that. That's another form of, I think, misery among moguls, if you will. So you do got to get right on the inside before you can have everything your heart desires on the outside.
Yeah, and imagine that. So imagine getting that right. And that's exactly what he coaches people how to do. Getting that right. And you're like, I'm good, right? I'm good. This will be cool to go after this, but I'm good. So that no matter what you're looking to achieve, you're already all right. Better than all right.
Exactly. Exactly. So it is valuable. And like I said, you got to get you got to get comfortable being uncomfortable and get through his book and, you know, and similar book, just like I'm working on, you know, we tease about this, but I've had to do a lot of work on the F word from your book. I work on forgiveness. I've had to do a lot of work trying to figure out how to meditate without going through my to-do list while I'm getting better. So it's all a work in progress. It's all a work in progress. Now, for next week, I'm just going to tease you. I have a couple of other things that we might talk about on my list next week, just to get you thinking about things. One of them is we can talk next week about how I almost annihilated my entire household while cleaning my oven.
Now you're teasing us because we have to wait 2 weeks to hear this story because next week is a holiday week and we're going to be rerunning a previous show. So now in 2 weeks, we'll be able to find out.
It's okay. When you almost take out your entire household by using the self-cleaning feature of an oven you never use, it's not something you'll forget. I will remember. I will remember.
Yeah, Frankenberry, why was she even trying to clean it? I don't understand.
Exactly. She doesn't use the damn thing. I mean, why are you cleaning what basically is just a cabinet?
Save it. Save it for 2 weeks. You know, the other reason why we're not going to be here for a week is because one of us is going to be having a birthday.
That's right.
Yeah, I wonder who that is.
Happy birthday, Frankenberry.
Yeah.
We love you.
Yeah. And by the way, future reference, I don't mind showing my ID to any guy to help let me get into a parking lot or a club. It's okay. Because I'm never going to be pulling into a parking lot or going into a club.
Or an army arsenal base.
Or an army arsenal base. Yeah, it's just not going to happen.
You never know. Thursday never. All right, kids. So happy early birthday, Frankenberry.
Yes.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And for Jonas Spillmore and for Carol Pesci and myself, we will return in a couple of weeks. Please enjoy and please be safe for your 4th of July weekend.
Yes.
And we'll talk to you in a few.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonas Spillmore and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 929WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.